the weakness is more your muscle can't feel force. It can't send a signal up, or it's not receiving a signal from the nervous system.
I don't know why I did that, so I apologize.
That's
it's
all right.
It's like a hiccup for some reason.
Hiccups are part of life. So you got to roll with it and make the best of it. I know.
All right. So speaking of hiccups, I am Pa Wenzel. We are in charge of performance. We finally caught up with Joel Woods of the Cleveland Muscle Lab, who's been kind enough to invite us into his home, his lab.
Sure. Yeah.
This is like, we're just joking. This might be the most comfortable interview we've had.
Not too shabby. Yeah.
Took the shoes off. Very nice carpeting. This is not the usual spot for the Muscle Lab, though, right?
Right, right. This is kind of the winter cozy version.
Yeah, this is Cleveland Muscle Lab version 2.0.
I'm going to call it that, yeah.
Okay, very cool.
Sold.
Before we get into the Muscle Lab, and also Matt, if you don't know what Matt is, you will know. You will know very well.
Absolutely.
Hopefully.
Educate you.
Yes, very much so. If you guys don't know, we usually have an outline for our guests to kind of have topics of discussion where we're going to go. So if you're watching on YouTube, this is the paper that we have that we kind of go off of, and I've totally butchered it ever since I wrote it.
I think it's better that way. It's organic, it's raw.
Send it to Joel, yeah.
Genuine.
So if we go all over the board, I'm going to apologize because I'm probably going to be all over the board with the questions.
It's more fun that way.
We usually kind of keep it that way anyway, but... if it's coming out of left field, just audience listeners, Joel, be prepared.
Okay, ride the wave.
Yeah. So quick housekeeping items. If you get a chance, please head over to our website, subscribe to our newsletter. Also, if you're on YouTube, iTunes, and Stitcher. Good review, great review. Make sure you share if you know Joel. If you're watching this because of Joel and for Joel, I know you're not watching it for me or listening it for me. Definitely share and get the word out about Joel. Last but not least, go over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/performance. Please support the podcast. Shout out to Afosu Korte, Benjamin Goldman, Anna Marie, and Rob Boom for making their pledges most recently. Thank you guys very much. All right, Joel, you ready?
Let's do this.
I've done enough talking.
Man, I know, you're doing great, yeah.
I'm going to do a little bit more talking because your background is physical therapy, rehab, right?
Yeah, worked in that field for sure.
Former Top Flight High School football coach?
Something like that. Yeah, I could go with that. That sounds excellent. Yeah.
You are certified in MAT, which is muscle activation technique.
Correct, yeah.
You are the creator of the Cleveland Muscle Lab.
Yep.
Which we are in right now.
2.0.
But before we get into to any of that, something that's probably totally not related to it at all, but something that I put myself through for a good cause.
Yeah.
Is the run amok.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If we can just... This is not your first time on Uncharted Performance, but
that's right, yeah.
Yeah, we had a quick little video a few months back,
right,
at the Run Amok. But if people weren't able to catch that or know what it is, if you could just give them basically a quick rundown of why you do it, what you do it for.
Yeah, so the Run Amok is kind of a 5K kind of CrossFit blended together. It supports, number one, the Cornerstone of Hope, which is a local nonprofit bereavement center. And this was our sixth one that we've done. And our concept was to make an event that's really inclusive to the fitness community, gets kind of the running community into a CrossFit gym atmosphere to experience the energy and the passion that's in there. So the event was a combination of running 9 different legs between 200 meters and 1,000 meters. So you do some exercises in the gym, like 10 pull-ups. You go run, you come back in the gym, do the next pot of exercises. It's Romeo. He likes to run amok too. And it's a lot of body weight stuff. And it's about 40 to 45 minutes, the average person. And it's all to a good cause. And it's just the energy and, you know, people, you know, high-fiving each other out on the road. And this year is at Seatown CrossFit. They were they helped us host it this year. So it's good. Real fun, not super competitive.
It was a great time. I am not a runner. I have no idea why I did it.
Yeah,
maybe in the future. But it was a blast. It was definitely a great community to be around. So if you're in Cleveland, it's going to be back next year.
Obviously. Yeah, I got to keep it going. Yeah.
So please pay attention to Joel. We'll get all his info towards the interview where you can find him, where you can follow him on social and whatnot. Because it's an awesome event. That said,
you did great, by the way. You were,
oh, thank you. Yeah. Like 36 minutes, right?
I think it was, yeah, PR. Yeah, I think it was, I think it was 23.
yeah, whatever. The Cleveland Muscle Lab. What is it?
So we are a muscle lab. We are focused on muscle health.
Okay.
And we use something called muscle activation techniques, mm-hmm. right, Matt, to address muscular imbalances. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an experiment. I kind of like this lab concept of you're always taking data. Our body's always changing and adapting. And kind of a constant process of finding out where our holes in our armor are.
Okay.
You know, where's the weakness? And we address the weakness and with some techniques, restore muscle weakness where we can find it. And then make our body more resilient handle the forces that we put on it.
I always ask the question, why? Why create this lab? Why create this place where you can experiment? Do you experiment on yourself, other people?
Yeah, definitely on myself. You know, I've been experimenting, you know, just with strength training and resistance training. I feel like it's, you know, we're not robots. Every human body is different. And I think exercise and strength and conditioning is kind of an ongoing experiment with every person.
Okay.
You know, how is your body adapting to exercise, to the forces you're putting on it? So it's always been a question in my head when I started getting into the personal training world is, my gosh, the more you learn, the more you're like, I don't know anything. You know, there's just so much to the human body. It's so complicated. So I always try to have this concept of, man, I don't know everything. I really always, when I have a client, I'm always trying to learn more about their body and how they're making sure that, you know, the exercise choices that we're doing are indeed, you know, having positive adaptations.
Okay.
So we always need data to figure that out.
And this is in addition to what might be going on in the gym or the training facility, is this kind of experimentation or improvement or exploration.
Yeah. Exploration. And we're kind of at the Muscle Lab more looking at it from like a micro level.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So we're kind of looking at how can we supplement, you know, someone's fitness program, mm-hmm. you know? So we're looking at it more like, let's look at the individual pieces, you know, make sure they're all working together. So when you're going and training, that the whole thing is working smooth. So.
Okay. And one of the things you just mentioned is the muscle activation technique.
Yeah.
And this is where we're going to get kind of into the details.
And geek out.
Geek out hard. So please don't hold back, because I have the pleasure of working with you one-on-one.
Yeah, it was great.
We kind of geeked out a little bit. I have some areas of weakness.
Hip, yeah, we all do, man. Yeah. I haven't found anybody yet who doesn't have something, you know, some tweak going on.
Exactly. What is muscle activation technique?
So it is a system to address the health of your muscle system. And three things really is an assessment tool. Mm-hmm. So, man, how do you evaluate, how you look at somebody move and figure out where's the weakness in someone's body? So that's number one. Number two is a corrective tool. So we use isometric, very, very precise isometric contractions to restore lost muscle function. And also manual palpation to kind of agitate the muscle to bring it back to life, if you will. And then the third thing is kind of managing someone's muscle system over time. So as someone goes and puts more exercise on, we're also kind of evaluating and see, you know, how are you holding up?
Okay.
Those weaknesses that we found that were restored, we want to be able to manage them because things might slide back once you start putting some force on it.
Gotcha. So if you don't mind, let's take those one by one.
Sure.
So I come into you.
Yes,
you can use me an example.
Yeah, right? Sure.
How do you assess someone?
So we're going to look at somebody move. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look at first kind of a macro view.
Okay.
You know, I want to see you squat and twist and kind of do the core functional movements, right?
So you're looking at movement.
Looking at movement, okay. Right? So from a gross perspective first, and, you know, all movement starts from posture. Mm-hmm. So really, we want to look at just how you standing. Look at the basics and see how your levers and you know, kind of how you're lining up. And then we streamline it to on a table. Well, we look at range of motion through the whole body. So one of the best tools I found is kind of a joint by joint range of motion exam to the body to kind of look at it. Because when we look at someone squat and do functional movements, it's so complicated. There's so many to figure out where the problem is. You know, if your knee's diving in, it could be hip, could be your trunk and spine, could be ankle, foot deviation. So we can really kind of get it on the table and look at piece by piece and figure out, oh man, where are you not moving? It's kind of asking the body a question, what can't you do? Where can't you move symmetrically?
Okay.
So that's kind of the next layer is looking feet, knee, hip, elbows, wrists. They're all important. We need all our joints to work well, and every muscle in the body matters. We wouldn't have it. So we want to do that to kind of scan up front and figure out, okay, where's your biggest limitations individually?
And the one thing that kind of stuck with me to today was I think we actually did look at my foot.
Yeah.
And how I was standing, again, posture-wise, how my foot was placed in terms of was it kind of, you know, bent to the side, kind of rounded out? Was it fully flat? You know, was the arch in a healthy position?
Right.
Which was very interesting because if you're, you know, back to the squat,
mm-hmm.
you want to have the most surface area to be able to apply the force throughout the foot. And sometimes people's feet come off and you know, you're losing force and be able to apply the muscular.
You're kind of dumping it out, right? Kind of exactly. Losing, the force is being dumped out, and you're making up for it somewhere else up the chain, probably. And
exactly,
compensating for it somewhere else. Which there's a cost eventually. It'll come back and bite you. So
we'll get to that. We'll get to that as well. The other thing was you mentioned the isometric contractions. What is an example of an isometric contraction?
Oh gosh, so isometric means same length, mm-hmm. right? So there's no movement. So it's just a very simple way of strength training. So put your hand out, right, like this, right? So I want you to push on my hand gently. Go ahead and push. So there's no movement going on. So that would be an example of an isometric exercise. There's no movement. And then you can kind of, you got variables of how long you can hold it for, your intensity. And neurologically, it's like there's less, your brain's not worried about moving, starting and stopping. So the neurological effort can just be placed on contraction. So it's a more focused kind of nervous system, the way that's involved with that too. So the key that we do is the position. So it's kind of, I kind of look at it as positional strength training. I'm kind of a positional strength training mm-hmm. coach. So if you're having trouble bending your elbow, right? Maybe you're having trouble with the front rack position. I mean, how many people have trouble with that?
Tons.
Like tons, right? So I just look at it as your ability to, pronate, extend the wrist, extend your fingers, bend your elbow all the way, right? So maybe this position is a challenge.
So it might not necessarily be a matter of flexibility and mobility, but it could be also a muscular lack of muscular adaptation.
So what one of our core sayings with Matt is that, a lot of the times tightness is secondary to weakness. So what's causing the tightness? What's causing the restriction? Sometimes it's, you're not, it's a different paradigm shift.
Yeah.
So if you're going the front rack position, I'm looking at what's shortening. Is it good at contracting to pull me into these positions? Maybe the stuff that's tight on the other side, perhaps is just a derivative of what's weak. Okay. So it's like a protective mechanism.
Gotcha.
So we look at, we talk about walking on ice a lot. If you ever like walk, especially now, right? Like hit some snow recently, more where he's from, not so much here. But if you walk on ice, there's a subconscious reflex to tighten up and that protects ourselves, right?
So inhibition, basically.
Inhibition, yeah. Right. So inhibition, that tightness is could be a response from weakness, from being unstable. So I see it all the time where we focus on making stuff stronger in positions. And because of inhibition, the other muscles on the opposite end just, it's like melting the ice. So without stretching, without any lacrosse balls and anything, we make the weak stuff stronger and the tightness melts away neurologically, which is really cool. So it's kind of a byproduct, which is a nice byproduct from getting stronger in the right positions.
It's a great segue. Manual palpitations?
That's such a hard word, man. That's so tough. Palpations. It took me 8 years to get that right.
Palpitations.
You
get me excited. Though,
that's what I'm here for.
Just talking to you, man. But you've done them to me. Can you just describe to someone what exactly that means?
Yeah. So if we found a muscle that's weak, mm-hmm. right? So we're saying, hey, boom, rack position's not great. I'm going to have him here. I'm going to have him bend his elbow. And if I were, ooh, nice.
Atlas stones.
I thought maybe it was Liam Nielsen. I want to play. So if you turn and put your wrist back, and if I were to apply a force and you couldn't hold that there in this real specific position, I'm going to say, man, what muscle's the best at stopping me from doing this? Mm-hmm. Which would be your brachialis muscle, okay. right? So it's weak. My hypothesis is that's what's not working right. What I would do is one way to stimulate it back on, we got to apply a stimulus. Mm-hmm. So besides isometrics, if I just pressed on the origin insertions of that muscle and really hitting the bony tendinous attachment, basically I just push on the bone. Really is what we're trying to do. And just stimulates without getting super geeky.
Yeah.
There's like proprioceptive stuff and some called a mechanoreceptor.
Okay.
That's really not working right. It's not the weakness is more your muscle can't feel force. It can't send a signal up, or it's not receiving a signal from the nervous system. It's just It's more of a signal problem. So
you're stimulating the receptors.
They're similar receptors. There's a little bit of calcium ion exchange kind of stuff. So chemically, there's some things happening when you do that. And there's also part of the weaknesses in inhibitions is low-grade inflammation. So there's other chemicals in there that are kind of getting in the way of those signals going up and down the chain. So it kind of flushes that inflammation out and just opens up the mechanical neurological pathway. It's pretty crazy. It looks like voodoo, but it's amazing how it's just a stimulus like a barbell.
It is, and it's and again, I've been through it with you, and it's very. I don't know. It was very, I guess, refreshing because I never done it, never tried it.
Yeah,
it was hip
abduction, right?
Hip abduction, yeah. And uh-huh. It was very poor in my left side.
I've seen better. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
Okay.
And then we spent, I think, about 5-10 minutes, and it was quite an improvement. Maybe relative because it was so poor, but still.
Yeah. You guys have such a quick, because it's a neurological thing.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily think that as a an athlete. Or just whoever that in the squat, people usually concentrate on because I think we use the squat as one of the assessments.
Your test, sure.
Yeah, and you always think about your glutes firing, your hamstrings, your quads, and feet and whatnot. Not necessarily thinking about the hips,
that frontal plane. Yeah,
exactly. So what I'm trying to get at is totally again. I told you guys this might go. We might get. I mean, I might just get all over the place.
Eat out, yeah.
One of the first things that we should be doing is maybe going through Matt, along with the functional movement screen,
mm-hmm.
before we start training or any training program, because we might be, as we talked before, we might be getting stronger.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are going up, but we might be getting stronger in all the wrong places.
Right.
And missing, parts of the chain that could eventually lead to some issues.
The strongest, stronger, right? Yeah. So in your functional movements, we always say the strongest, stronger, the weak stay weak.
Yeah.
Unless you're getting them in the ball game. Yeah.
Exactly. So just, kind of going back, I should have started this interview. Hey, go back to go back to your coach and see how you can start thinking about how to, maybe get in touch with Joel, how to employ some of these screens and assessments and these techniques, because again, it can benefit you by preventing and avoiding costs down the line.
Which is important. That's really what the Muscle Lab is about. And it's about making prudent decisions. It's about taking information and, learning information from a coach, but learning how to evaluate yourself. That's important to me too. So, and make sure that your training is, you're weighing risk and benefit.
Okay.
And just it's having upfront information. And one thing that's important to me is exercising for life, man. I want to be able to, when I'm 70 and 80, do some cool stuff. I'll be able to surf and hike. And you got to make sure that your training is also supporting the 80-year-old version of yourself. So I'll begin with the end in mind. So if you're getting into a training program, you're kind of new or you've been training, I think it's so important to have that mindset of what's it going to look like when you're 80? What are you going to be doing with your body that's fun and gives you enjoyment? And making sure that you're, everybody's got stuff. Everybody's rolled ankles and has compensation patterns. So it's just so smart. That's where we want to fit in. It's kind of this advocate where we're going to be able to evaluate you and find your holes and correct them and make sure you're not overtraining and you're not, overbuilding things and create more compensation. So there's always a cost for compensation.
Yeah.
There's a cost and down the line, the statistics of musculoskeletal injuries is crazy. The number and how much, billions of dollars are spent on musculoskeletal stuff that we can prevent if we figure it out early on.
Exactly.
If we can squat and run and deadlift, with the PVC pipe, flawlessly, man, you're going to, it's just a gateway to health for a long time.
Another thing is, besides obviously what we just mentioned, you can also get stronger too.
That's kind
of pretty obvious that if you're using all your muscles,
yes,
and they're synchronized and they're firing it correctly,
yep,
at the time they're supposed to be.
That's it. Can your muscles contract and can they contract now?
Yeah,
on demand, subconsciously.
Exactly.
Right, just on their own. That'd be great, right?
Yeah, you will get stronger.
Yeah,
and I think the stronger you are personally, that you know, the better you're off at 80.
Huge, yes.
And that's kind of the theme of season 4.
Strength matters, yeah, man.
Exactly.
It's a big deal, and it's a message that needs to be said.
Yeah.
Being strong matters, and strong everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Not just in your glutes.
Not just your glutes. I mean, you want the glutes working, for sure, but but if you didn't, every muscle's for a reason, man.
Yeah.
Little dinky muscles, a pyramid
Alice. How many muscles in the human body?
There's, I mean, like 600 altogether, okay. But there's about,
totally random question.
250, 300 kind of main musculoskeletal movers. You know, like the jaw muscles and all that stuff. Like, you know, there's tons of those guys. Crazy names. Yeah. I don't even know. But for sure. There's a bunch, man. I think we have about 250, 300 muscle tests. So I can test each one individually.
Okay.
So that's a cool thing is I can take the guesswork out of it. Mm-hmm. Right? Squats, not where it should be, which is almost everybody, right? And you can pinpoint every muscle. Foot, hips, trunk, and spine. We can isolate it as best as we can, test it, and see if it's working or not.
So after you've done your manual work, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
What's the next step? How do you go from that to actually, you know, thinking long term?
Yeah.
Improving the athlete or the client long term.
So it's like this exercise continuum.
Yeah.
So at the beginning is, can a muscle contract? Mm-hmm. Can it contract in a position? And we test the muscles in a shortened position. So most injuries happen right like in extreme ranges. So I want to make sure your muscles contract when they're fully shortened. So that's number one, right? So kind of isometric strength is first. So I look at it going from isometrics, making sure that that's dialed in. So think of positional strength. So we got muscles working. Now we want to add isometric training. One, I look at kind of global functional movements. So we do a lot of work with squats and deadlifts and bench press and hollows and supermans and all that kind of CrossFit gymnastic stuff. And as you're building the individual pieces, let's keep movement out of it. Dynamic movement, there's a lot neurologically going on. And if you're thinking long-term 80 years old, man, you might want to take a year or 6 months or 3 months and really build a strong foundation. So to me, take movement out of the equation for now, get really good at isometric positional strength. And then also having isometrics for your individual weaknesses. And then you can build, the energy systems. So isometrically, just looking at that, we still got the three different energy systems. So doing some 10-second isometric contractions, some 30 seconds, 2 minutes, up to 3-4 minutes, and you're going to get more aerobic. So I want to make sure that, you know, your muscles can also work in each energy system. So now they can contract. Now we got to retrain them because there might be a weakness, like aerobically. Maybe they're not, your deltoid isn't real good at the 2 to 3 minute isometric strength mark.
Gotcha. So you can apply like max effort, dynamic effort, or sub-max effort to the prescription.
To
the MAP prescription.
Yeah. So it's just kind of a concept of restoring muscle health. So now that it can contract, let's make sure it can contract along the whole paradigm, and then after isometrics, we're good. Then we move to eccentrics. So eccentric loading, we're adding movement, and then third would be concentric. So concentric only, and then you add dynamic, put it all together, and then you're off in your strength and conditioning world and applying all those principles, and then a cool thing is as you're now back to dynamic movement and you're deadlifting and squatting and doing all those things, it built that really strong base asymmetrically, eccentrically, concentrically. Now you got it back together, and then we can check. Now you can check. Oh, my hip abduction is still pretty good. I can keep pounding. So we want to also learn how to evaluate ourselves. So if inhibition occurs again, right? Because overtraining and or something, or you fell off a curb and tweaked it, like your range of motion will tell you.
Okay.
If now you've got the sensitivity of, man, my hip abduction's limited again. Something went wrong. So then we can, try to build it back up again.
Yeah, so that was going to be my next question. So before we take a break, we don't want to stop applying the methods just because we're we've gone through assessment and we've gone through the progression and adaptation where we're, all right, everything's firing right now. Let's get back in the gym and start training again.
Need to get back in the gym,
But once you have been for, you know, 6-12 months, don't just totally forget about what you did 6-12 months ago.
Yeah.
You need to keep that in your back pocket because it is another tool.
Keep
it
in your back,
To, again, as a resource or as on your own tool that you can, hey, this was good for 6 months, but I stopped doing, you know, something, again, fell off the wagon where I need to kind of go back and revisit this because, again, I'm not firing correctly because of what I'm seeing in my movement.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's good to have some tools. And it's part of my job with the Muscle Lab is make sure, you know, clients have a toolkit of isometrics and things that they can apply on their own.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Which is important to have some stuff. But it's just thinking of, you know, I have a bag of tricks of isometrics. That's most people don't have that. Okay. I think that's a missing piece of the fitness puzzle.
Perfect. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. We'll be right back with Joel and continue geeking out and being all over the place.
All over. It's more fun that way. Yeah.
All right. Take it easy, guys. Be right back. Welcome to the intermission, the most epic intermission you will ever watch or listen to.
Very, very,
very epic. We are actually sitting down, so it's not so epic. But we are taking a little break to take the opportunity to remind everyone a few quick items.
Item number one, head on over to our website, unchartedperformance.com, and sign up for the newsletter there.
If you don't, our man over here, Liam Neeson, will come and find you. If you don't know Liam Neeson, you don't want to find out.
He's very scary. We're terrified of him. Also, if you are listening on iTunes or Stitcher, make sure you leave an honest 5-star review and a comment. You can do the same on YouTube if you're watching. You can like the video and leave a comment if you feel so inclined.
And if you happen to be watching on YouTube, on our screen, you already see all our social media accounts and where you can follow us. But if you are listening on iTunes or Stitcher and you need that daily fix of Uncharted and everything epic about it, like us on Facebook at Uncharted Performance, same thing on Instagram at Uncharted Performance, and Twitter at Reach Uncharted. And last but not least, and probably most importantly, something very cool that we're doing for the upcoming episode, upcoming season and moving forward is
Patreon. Patreon is a very cool platform. It allows you, the viewer, the listener, to pledge to support us and get rewarded for it, of course. What we also chose to do with Patreon is to donate 10% of your pledges to A Better Chance. It is a program that helps youth or kids and young adults both to get better access to education.
So without further ado, make sure to subscribe, follow, comment, leave us feedback. The more, the better. Mm-hmm. And back to the show.
Thank you.
Enjoy, guys. Take care.
You know, keep all right. It simple and... So get stronger.
We're back with Joel, and Joel is not indirectly pointing out how stupid I am.
We're all stupid.
No, just kidding. What we're gonna do now in the second half is we're gonna try to emphasize a few points from the first half, or maybe one specifically that Matt really emphasizes. You know, pardon the redundancy in that statement, but that's the topic of being efficient with muscle contraction efficiency.
Yep.
Contractile efficiency.
Contractile efficiency. Write that down. Contractile efficiency.
Exactly.
It's a big deal.
That's the words of the day. Why? Again, why? You just want to emphasize that. Why is that important?
It's a huge deal, man. It's really your muscle system does so much for you, mm-hmm. you know, in everyday life and the cool stuff like squatting heavy. You know, we want to make sure that it's kind of neurologically, it's efficient. You know, every muscle in the body can contract well. Because if you lose contractile efficiency because of inhibition, so there's this thing called muscle inhibition that's the problem. It's this problem that no one's talking about and we're not talking about enough is inhibition creates a lack of contractile efficiency. And when our muscles are contracting like they're supposed to, they're going to tolerate force as best as possible. So we're kind of born with like a natural, we call set point. Mm-hmm. There's a kind of a maximal threshold of how much force a muscle can handle. So I think of it, if I injected force into your anterior deltoid, right?
That'd be awesome.
If I had like a syringe, like, shh, here's some force in there. And it's kind of what's happened with a dumbbell and a barbell, or, you know, it's just force being injected into our muscle system is can it tolerate that volume or intensity, that of force, or not? So we want a high level of tissue tolerance. Imagine if all the tissues in your body had kind of the natural or the optimal state of force tolerance. That's what we want. And what happens on the reverse side of the coin is that when you have high contractile efficiency, it also generates more force. Who doesn't want that?
Yeah.
Right? You want maximal force generation kind of reflexively. So it's kind of a subconscious and a conscious part of the muscle system. And certain muscles just, man, more, you know, you have to think about your feet muscles when you walk. You know what I mean? You're squatting, yeah. You're thinking about a lot of stuff, but some muscles are just, can't be thinking about them. You won't exactly. Be able to do stuff. So that's what we need to restore. So what happens is if you have some inhibition because of some trauma or overuse or dehydration or some kind of chemical nutritional deficiencies, that can cause this muscle inhibition problem. And where am I going with that? I totally forgot.
It's all good.
Contractile efficiency. Yeah. So
it's very important.
Oh, so we have a new set point. So let's say you break your arm. It's never going to be the same again. It's also a neurological stress. Your muscles are affected by that trauma, let's say. And there's going to be a new set point. So you're born with, like, on a scale of 1 to 10, this is how much your anterior deltoid can handle. Now it has a new set point because of an injury. So now it can only handle this much, maybe 7 out of 10 scale, right? So your operating window for healthy exercise is less. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I have a smaller operating window. And if because of compensation and, you know, chronic stuff, years and years go by and you're putting push-ups and doing stuff, that tissue tolerance might be dropping slowly as we age. Because it's still kind of limited, or we're putting more force on it than it can handle. So this is kind of this, you know, downward spiral of losing muscle function. You know, and I was in Naples recently. You know, and every time I go to Naples, there's a lot of older people there, and just watching them. You know, just walking on the beach and shuffling around, or some of them are like 80-year-old guys running, looking good posture. Like, I want to be that guy.
Yeah.
Now, how does that happen versus somebody who's right? Their mechanics, their muscle function is so poor. Right, he's walking in and slow, and it's kind of, you get to see that accumulation of stress over a lifetime, the effects of that, you know. So what can we do to stop that?
Yeah,
you know what I mean, because I think everybody wants to be the 80-year-old guy on the beach with his shirt off, right? Like with Rocky theme song going on, like it's like, so it's really addressing and finding where this inhibition is, raising that set point. So let's say your anterior deltoid is a 7 out of 10 of how much force it can take. Our goal is to raise that tissue tolerance through the muscle activation technique. So now it's up to 8. Now it's up to 9, let's say. Okay. So now, if we can keep it there, how old are you?
33.
33 years young. Great age. So imagine if we address that now, right? So if this stays at a 7, we never address the anterior deltoid deficiency that you probably even know that you have. It's kind of, we feel tightness when we feel pain. We don't really feel what's weak so much. You know, it's kind of hard to tell. So that's kind of the end goal, man. Hey, we raise the tissue tolerance. We address over time all the muscles in the body. Like I said, there's tons of them, so you can't do it like in one session.
Yeah.
You got to take time to investigate the whole thing, and then, you know, you put some force on it. We do some work. We get this anterior deltoid contractile efficiency better. We're going to do some cool stuff. Now you're feeling better. Now you're PRing your press, and maybe that four, because you can handle more force, and then maybe it slides back a little bit. So it's this kind of constant process. Applying force in the gym, does it break down that threshold or not? So it's kind of this, we kind of say we want to build people up so they can do the fun and cool stuff that they love to do. And well, now, like I said, we're all done. We're all going to overtrain because it's fun to push ourselves, right? Like we should be in a position where we can push ourselves. But our job at the Muscle Lab is we're going to be here to build you back up again. You're already going to know, hey, these are my pockets of weakness, and these are just things that chronically, because of traumas or overuse injuries from your past and motor patterns have just been hardwired for years, you're just going to have certain issues that are going to kind of be your thing. We can find them right away, get it back, increase it the next day instead of 10 years later.
And this is something we talked about during the break off camera. Are we born with it, or is it just Maybelline?
Right? It's Maybelline. It's Maybelline, right? Yeah.
So Maybelline's a big deal. Are we, you know, everybody always makes the example of kids running around, playing, crawling, jumping, squatting with perfect form. Are we born with the capacity to fully recruit and, you know, fully contract with great efficiency, synchronization of our you know, muscle fibers from you know, the time we come out of the womb? Or is it something that it's, you know, we develop through training and adaptation? It's a little bit of both.
Such an interesting concept, because I got four kids under six, and watching them.
You have great case studies.
Got case studies, man. They're going to be animals when they're older. They already got barbells upstairs, and they love to work out. So, I think there's a combination of both, you know, because I see these pristine movers. They're just naturally awesome at moving, you know, and it's like, number one, how do we create an environment where they don't mess that up? You know, so I'd love to see kids doing, you know, functional movements, and it took CrossFit Kids course, and it kind of had the concept of, that starts at three, teaching kids at 3 years old. So at a certain point, you have natural movement, and then there's motor learning taking place. There's like, you can actually, as a three-year-old, receive instruction to push your knees out, right? So I think it's a combination of keeping these natural movement patterns, jumping and landing and twisting and pushing and pulling, giving them an environment where they can express those movements neurologically. And I think there's a certain point where what we do in the gym, the squat, some of those deadlifts and presses, a little bit, they're just still a little bit artificial. There's still a little bit of these performance points that maybe you don't really need them in everyday life, because they're not probably going to be maximally loaded all the time.
Yeah.
So you want to learn.
You're not going grocery shop to max.
And like, right, you're going to be, right, oh, got the diapers.
Yeah.
But so it's all about demand, right? What's the demand? So if we're saying, hey, I want to squat heavy once or twice a week till I'm 80, you're going to have to learn some different things, maybe just aren't natural.
Okay.
And then I think, yeah, having a real, using the classic, you know, strength training stuff that's out there that's not sexy at all. It's just the simple stuff. Mm-hmm. Progressive loading of tissues and, you know, deloading here and there. And I think it, if it's really smart programming, that's simple. I just love simple programming that works. It works. It gets you better.
And we obviously lose it because we're having this conversation, right? You're here. You do what you do because there's a need. So we're not going to get into it too deeply, but we lose it along the way because obviously the modern environment, right? Everybody,
sure,
you know. Desk bound, whatever it is.
Zoo animal thing, you know.
You get home, you just plop on your couch, you know, you had a tough day at
Netflix,
work.
Let's do it.
Besides training, anything besides sports training or sports specific training, be it, you know, soccer, CrossFit, Olympic weightlifting.
Yeah.
Have you, based on your experience, is there anything besides that we can maybe do or add to, or just maybe I'm not an athlete.
Yeah,
I'm just it's not
you need exercise for health.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
it's what can I do to better myself to not be that gentleman at Naples that's you know, having trouble walking, and be that other 80-year-old gentleman that's, you know, buff with a great tan running.
Hank, I think his name is Hank.
Okay, Hank.
Yeah. Hank.
Be Hank.
Yeah, be Hank. Be Hank.
Be Hank. Yeah, right.
Yeah, hashtag be Hank. And that's really where I've kind of diverted to. My mission is really to take those non-athletic people, because there's already so many people that are voice for them, but taking the average person that really, man, needs strength for health. And how do you do that? How does the average guy be that guy at 80? So I think there's like a list. I actually want to create an ebook about that. Okay. It's a really important topic. Is like
exclusive right
longevity.
Here.
Right here. Boom. Yeah. We're going to do it. I just got to do it now. That's something I'm passionate about, and because that's what I want to be. My athletic pursuits are kind of, you know, not what they used to be. You know, all these kids, it's pretty, they can't really train for something.
It's very difficult in itself, you know.
Yeah, I need to train for that. But, you know, I think a normal person needs to have some competition in their life. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. So to me, an average healthy individual should be running some 5Ks here and there. It's just so much fun stuff, you know, Spartan races. And I think an average person can do that without like spending your life training for it. So I think one is having some competition, do something that's fun. Hiking and adventure, I think, is so important. Just getting outside is important. Getting some vitamin D. I think once a week, go outside and just explore and hike. It's so good for us, you know, for emotional health too. Yeah. It's all those through an integrated system. So getting outside and exploring. The Mathetone method is the thing. So if you haven't looked into that, that is where it's at, I believe, is having a robust aerobic system, especially for aging, you know. So if you have classical barbell strength training that the average guy would do, right? If he did squats, deadlifts, presses, push-ups, pull-ups, some auxiliary exercises, and then also on the other end of the spectrum, just some long, slow running. It gets beat up. if you can do some LSD, long, slow distance, in the right heart rate, that's what the Mapitone method is. It's kind of a, it's aerobic exercise with a certain heart rate that's very low intense. But this low intensity aerobic stuff, it builds us like our mitochondria and our blood vessels, that higher intensity kind of CrossFit-y and aerobic, the stuff that feels like, wow, that did something, that doesn't build your aerobic system like this does.
And something very interesting that you mentioned, again, during a break, we should start taping these breaks.
Because we
get a lot of good content out of it too, is, you know, from my training perspective, I want to be as explosive, as powerful, as strong as I can be within, you know, a very short time frame.
Uh-huh.
And that's concentrating more on the fast twitch muscle development, sure. Right? But you mentioned that we don't want to be too fast twitchy, because that's not very good for us either.
There's a balance of this, yeah. You know, all life is about balance. And if you're still saying, hey, I want to bias a strength or power goal, you can't lose some of the other spectrum. One for health, and I think there is a core, that's where the hybrid athlete comes into play. So if you haven't checked out the hybrid athlete, Alex Viata, I think I'm on the first, people are certified in that. So that's kind of the idea of...
So early super exclusive, we're probably going to get back with Joel and do a part two to talk about hybrid athlete, because that's become a lot more popular, especially nowadays.
So interesting.
So early preview.
I love it. Yeah, and it's just a hybrid athlete. It's just kind of a CrossFit idea, but saying, hey, it's really hard to be good at 50 things. It's about being good at a strength sport and an endurance sport at the same time. How do you train for both of those at the same time? Whether it's, say, hybrid athlete, I'm going to do an Olympic lifting competition and I want to be good at a half marathon. Like, how do you do that without beating yourself up and making and actually getting better at both of them? And you're going to have a primary sport. So if powerlifting, Olympic lifting is your strength sport, there's some level where building your aerobic system will actually make that better. And your training, right? Your recovery between your training sessions is super important at that point in time. Because your incremental strength gains, you got to earn them, right? They're tiny. So maximizing your recovery time, I mean, that's huge. So it's just by some real simple aerobic concepts. And a lot of it doesn't beat you up. So if you're doing it the right way, actually, you're not overtraining. So
okay, very cool.
It's interesting. Yeah, another day, but that's... Yeah,
before we get into it, we have a special guided meditation from Joel.
Oh, shoot.
In a few minutes.
No.
But are we, again, kind of going back to when we're born and as we develop, are we all intended to use the same muscles the same way for the same movements?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I think for the most part, I was actually watching a squat webinar the other day, the barbell physio guy.
Okay.
And one, there's just lever lengths. Mm-hmm. So I look at a kind of engineering perspective, yeah. Right? So if you have a really long femur versus a short femur or torso, that's going to change muscle relationships. So there's going to maybe be, you know, differences there, just mechanical. It's all mechanics. It's all engineering. So I'd say for the most part, it's going to be the same muscles. You know, when you squat, glutes, core strength, you know, quads. But things like deadlifting, for sure, where your torso length is going to really change what's going on mechanically. And the shapes of the bones and the joints. So they're saying in this podcast, like the Polish population, I think they have really like shallow hip sockets, which gives them a lot of flexibility. Right, to get in a deeper squat.
That's true.
There's always outliers. I might have it wrong. Maybe it was the opposite. Maybe no, they were the other one. But they're saying, like, those Eastern Bloc countries, man, they're killing it, right? Your strength sports, right?
I think they forgot about me.
I mean, anyways, but because they're hip sockets, right? It's more shallow. It can move more, okay. But it's less stable. So they have a higher rate of hip problems.
Gotcha.
Where other, I forget, maybe like English, Ireland, like that. There a lot of the genetics has a deeper hip socket, so it gets jammed up. There's a bony limitation, so they have a harder time getting into that. So that's why a lot of those guys are better at the strongman stuff, because they're not really going to deep ranges. They're higher up in their hip positioning, so they can handle that more from a genetic joint surface area shape perspective. So
that makes a lot of sense, because obviously a lot of athletes, they go into a specific sport because they're tend to be genetically predisposed.
It's more fun when you're good at it. Yeah.
yeah. And it's easier for people to get good at it because, like, again, of their anatomy and how that anatomy helps them express muscular strength and force.
And get into the positions that the sport requires.
Okay.
Yeah.
You ready to do this meditation?
Not really, but well, I guess we're going to do it.
All right. So we, in the first half, we kind of we did more of the theoretical. We threw in some examples, but we're going to have Joel basically kind of walk us through this, you know, coming in to work with you in terms of, you know, helping us to improve, you know, the firing mechanisms, the recruitment mechanisms to help us get jacked.
Yeah. And tolerate the force so you don't get beat up and can keep doing what you love to do. So, yeah. So it's kind of, what does a session look like?
Yeah.
You know, we got these concepts. So someone's going to come in. Obviously get their history and all that, but I'm going to see someone move.
Yeah, there's a
you know,
I'm going to break up the guided meditation right away.
Bam, back at this.
Yeah, you Joel does have a very thorough questionnaire that he sends out.
Yeah.
And the questions are not what you might expect. So I'm not going to tell you what the questions are,
super secret.
Yeah, but we might have hinted at some of those throughout this conversation.
Yeah.
They're not your typical assessment questions that you I don't know, a doctor or a PT or something like that. So
I want to get as much pertinent upfront information.
They're very
on
cool questions.
Yeah, there's stuff like you wouldn't think about. And,
lifestyle.
A lot of lifestyle stuff.
Yeah.
I just love people. I want to get, if you're going to be my client, I want to get to know you.
You need a big heart on this white shirt, right?
It's underneath. But I want to get, and I take, it's a responsibility when someone comes in, their body's in my care. Mm-hmm. That potential 80-year-old version of you is like, I'm going to affect that with what I'm doing. Whether I'm applying strength and conditioning or the muscle activation techniques, I want to make the best decisions I can. So I know as much as I can up front. Like, where do I start? You know, where do you start with someone training around the table? I want to figure that out. It's like 16 pages. It's nuts. But like, yeah, if you played the tuba in high school, I want to know that because you're going to be doing this, you know, for 10 years. And maybe that's where something's coming from, mm-hmm. because of some positions you were in, or, you know. So, yeah.
All right. So back to the
questionnaire. So I got all that information. Know about your life questionnaire. And first one, I want to know what movements matter to you. So maybe, you know, you play golf, so twisting. And then just I want to see how you're doing. I got the kind of alignment bod posture thing up there. I'm going to videotape you squatting and just see how you're moving in general and look at how you're compensating. And just take note of that. And then what we do is a range of motion evaluation. So, we have about 60, 70 like range of motion evaluations that we'll do. So over time, I want to see the whole thing. So it might take two or three sessions to look from your neck all the way to your feet to check the whole thing. There's lots of joints. So basically, we'd look at you, come in here, and if you're coming in with an upper extremity issue, I just want to see how your shoulder moves in all the different planes of motion. So we're going to look at active range of motion too. So I'd have you lock your elbow, you know, go off to the side as far as you can, you know, sagittal plane backwards. I want you to twist your arm and do it. So we're just going to look at how all the pieces move, bending your elbow this way, and look to see where you're compensating. And I'm going to kind of take notes of all the parts that don't move right. And we're looking for symmetry. I'm really looking for left to right. Oh, that doesn't move as far. But because of compensation, it might be the best athletes are the best compensators. So you might do a little wiggle as you barely see it, and it allows you to do it. So I want to make sure I'm thorough and not missing a limitation because you just compensated through it. So I'm real nitpicky. It's like, hey, you know, don't move your pinky finger when you're bending your elbow. It'll do anything. Our body will do anything subconsciously to find a position of strength. You might move your pinky a little bit, and it's just enough to get you through something. So we do that, and then we're going to say, hey, where's your biggest limitation today? So of all the things in your shoulders, let's say you're having a problem in shoulder flexion. That's your biggest, we call it an elephant. So we're going to work on your biggest elephant in the session. Okay, so I'm going to say, hey, I want to test all the muscles on Powell that lift him and contract up, right? So that's what we're focusing on. And there's a whole bunch of them. You know, like there's like maybe 18 muscles that do that. So they're going to be on the table, and I'm going to test one by one. And I'm going to put you into different positions. Okay, so let's have you rotate here, come across, keep your shoulder down, don't compensate, lock your elbow. And all I'm going to do is I'm going to set them up in a position that's going to test a certain muscle. So right here, if I applied a force with my hands, right, this direction, I'm probably testing like your pec. Right, so whatever direction I'm pushing, it's like mechanically this sternal file. I'm probably making noises. So based on what position, or if I push you here, and I push this way, now I'm probably getting the clavicular part of your pec. So I'm going to go through and test these, and what I'm looking for is stability. So if I put you in that position, boop, come across, do it right, keep your elbow locked, don't let me pull, keep it locked. relax. I'm going to pull. Don't let me. Ready? Resist. So I just pull for 2 seconds. I want to see, can it contract in that position, okay, not compensate out of it, and contract on demand? That's all I'm looking for. So I'm going to do that kind of testing for all the muscles in your shoulder, all 20 of them, 18, however many it is. There's a bunch. So he was strong in that position, standing. Might be different on the table because yeah. Maybe you're like, you know, compensating somewhere up the chain. So we want to be as thorough as possible. And if it's weak, we do the isometric or the palpation and move on to the next muscle. So we're just trying to get all the positions and muscles that would, you know, be part of that shoulder flexion issue. So one by one, we identify strong or weak. If it's weak, we correct it neurologically with those tools. We test it again to see if it worked. Not every tool works. You know what I mean? So the cool thing is with Matt, we have a checks and balances. I apply the technique or the correction. If it doesn't work, at least I know right away. If it's not working, maybe there's something else wrong. It's not my scope of practice. Maybe it's a structural abnormality or something else going on, or refer you out. So that's how a session would go. We'd cover all of them. And then we check your range of motion again. We want to see if it got better. It's crazy, the stuff I've seen. Go from here to here by making stuff stronger. It's like the tightness just melts. And now you have stability. Yeah. You have stability in all these positions that I tested. So then what we do is I want to make sure it can handle stress. So once we go through that, I guess kind of a pattern, a kind of a list of muscles for that thing, I want to make sure that it can hold stress out outside of the session. So I might have you go back in the gym. Maybe do a couple barbell presses, or maybe I do some kind of strength exercise on it. Then I go back on the table and I test it again. So I go through a second round and see what's still weak. So some muscles might have a really low threshold, where I activate it once and it can hold it. If it has a low threshold, it might take multiple times to get it to like a battery in your car. You might have to crank it up a couple times to get the juice flowing. So that's kind of how thorough we're going to pick in one area. We might go through that pattern 2, 3, 4 times in between. We're stressing it out. And then the next session, move on to the next elephant. So the goal is to eventually go through your whole body.
Yeah.
Take a while, but.
Then that said, you are very thorough. So if you want the results or the desired outcome and improvement and benefits, you also have to be a patient. Patient.
Yeah.
Patient athlete. Because in order to, because when we were working on the hip, you had me do it, I think like 4 or 5 times,
mm-hmm.
because I kept compensating with my right side.
Yeah.
And you'd notice the slightest of movement again.
God, Hawkeyes, man, to develop these.
Yeah. And it can be, you know, rather frustrating at times.
Sure,
when your body is not cooperating with what you want it to do, but that's how you know when it's not doing what it's supposed to.
It's just finding the truth. You know, yeah. It is frustrating, but just we want to find the truth. You know, yeah. Your body can't do this the right way.
Okay. Something that you mentioned earlier, and it kind of stuck in my head, was that sometimes we get exposed to positions we don't necessarily train for.
Okay.
So let's say, you know, I catch a snatch. You know,
yeah,
in an awkward position. You know, I'm coming forward more on my torso.
Yeah,
or you know, the squat is just so heavy that you know my knees do buckle slightly.
Yeah,
right?
It happens. If you're pushing yourself, right? Yeah.
How do we? Can we train for that as well? Can we prepare our body for that as well? Should we?
Brilliant concept. I think so. It depends what you want. If you want to be, I think the goal is to have as resilient body as possible. I want a robust body that can handle, one, the forces we know we're going to do. So you know you're going to squat and we're going to run, right? Like, or not. But like, there's things we know we're going to do because we love them. So we definitely want to be prepared for that. But guess what happens? Life yeah. happens. And again, we should be hiking and exploring and playing ultimate frisbee and doing stuff. And we're going to be thrown into positions sometimes. Life is going to force us. Or picking up a kid and it's like in the back seat of the car and they drop the iPad back there and you're like, right, I don't train this position in the gym, yeah. but we're going to get into crazy positions in life. So really, I think it's a really smart way is to think about having, kind of hitting all these corners at some point in time when you're training, at least with active range of motion, at least like actively going to different positions. That's like number one, let alone planning to load. So I think having some kind of movement practice, just actively with control and thought going into things, and then with isometrics is kind of doing that is is applying isometric strength in a different position. So, which I something I play with too.
Okay, very cool. What do you want the listeners, the viewers, to take away from this interview? We talked about a lot. We talked about a little bit. We talked about a bunch of different things. What's the one thing that you want them to take away?
Strength matters.
Strength matters.
So I actually want to get t-shirt. Strength matters, but it matters everywhere. So it matters in be good at the core foundational barbell lifts. It matters, you know, heart strength, aerobic strength, and the function of every muscle in your body, all hundreds of them, they all matter. So really paying attention to, do I have a healthy muscle system? Is my muscle system resilient head to toe? And how do you even figure that out? So find a muscle specialist. I think it'd be great if everybody had a muscle guy, a muscle mechanic, and that's what we are. I'm a muscle specialist for somebody.
I like muscle mechanic.
You like muscle mechanic? Yeah. Actually, my old business is muscle mechanics with an X.
Okay.
Back in the day, but yeah, you kind of need a muscle mechanic that you know, you're like a race car, yeah. Right? You want to go out and do fun stuff, so you kind of need a mechanic to like, okay, before we go racing your car, let's make sure the lug nuts are tight and okay. And then when you're racing your car, let's doing fun stuff. Let's build you back up. So, but for your whole life, my goal is to be a lifelong advocate. Keep building up so you keep through that. You're Hank when you're 80. Be Hank.
Be Hank.
That's yeah. Get that be strong, t-shirt. Be Hank.
Yeah, yeah. Where can people find you? If they want to pursue you, they want to get their contractile efficiency up.
Which you should, right?
That's yeah, good. Come on, should, yeah. Up.
So, you know, clemuscellab.com, my website. Facebook, we have a website. A Facebook page. Instagram. I think that's it. Find me in my basement.
In my garage. In the winter, it's in the basement. Otherwise, it's in the garage.
The garage is great, man.
The garage is pretty cool. The basement is cool, but the garage is pretty neat.
Yeah, I have to do a summer episode up
yeah.
there. Yeah.
All right. Joel, thank you, sir, man.
Thanks, brother.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for doing this podcast. This is great.
Oh, like, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks for taking, and Alina too. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, she does all the hard work.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
She doesn't want to get in front of the camera maybe one time.
You just got to stand for your look. That's yeah, everybody's yeah. got a role, you know? Yeah.
She looks much better than I do. I have no idea why I'm here. All right, guys. Thank you very much. Take care.
Peace.